It's nearly noon and time for the KMXT Midday News. It's 52 degrees right now in beautiful downtown Kodiak. We're looking for more rain, more wind, showers before 7 p.m. tonight. Coming up on the Midday Report, Donlin Gold and Pebble, the perfect partnership. Story on Measure 2 that could radically change the way Alaskans pick their elected leaders. Malaspina Glacier is melting. What will it leave in its wake? And a little more on Florence from Nome. Vessel owners, please check your boats. This wind and weather with the heavy rain has several of them yanking at their tie lines and filling up with water. So don't forget your boat. We just had a low tide on the east side here at 11:51. It was a 1.99-foot tide. I'd call that a 2-foot tide. You're going to be having a low tide on the west side at 12:35. That's going to be a 2.3-foot tide.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Trump is declaring that the United States is turning the corner on the coronavirus pandemic.
We will distribute a vaccine. We will defeat the virus. We will end the pandemic, and we will enter a new era of unprecedented prosperity, cooperation, and peace.
As his pre-recorded remarks were heard at the UN General Assembly, the U.S. learned that its COVID-19 death toll had surpassed 200,000. NPR's Will Stone reports that overall, the number of coronavirus cases in the United States is going back up after declining significantly by the end of the summer.
Certain parts of the country have a much higher death toll from COVID. Just three states, Massachusetts, New York, and New Jersey, account for more than a quarter of all U.S. deaths. Florida, Texas, and California also had a large share of deaths. Fewer people are dying compared to the spring, partly because younger people are getting infected. But Dr. Bill Pounderly at Washington University in St. Louis worries about a surge of cases in the winter.
Then we will see more people dying. The proportion may be less, but the numbers will still be high.
Cases are now climbing significantly in the Great Plains and parts of the Midwest. Will Stone, NPR News, Washington.
Utah Republican Senator Mitt Romney says he will consider President Trump's forthcoming nominee to fill the Supreme Court vacancy following the death of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. NPR's Susan Davis reports Romney's decision makes it more likely the Senate will fill the vacancy before the election.
With Romney on board, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell appears to have the party unity he will need to confirm President Trump's nominee in the coming weeks. Romney has broken ranks before, but he told reporters today that he would not vote to block the process from advancing and would consider the nominee on the merits. He also acknowledged that a successful confirmation would shift the ideological balance of the court towards conservatives.
But my liberal friends have, over many decades, gotten very used to the idea of having a liberal court. And that's not written in the stars.
The White House says President Trump will announce his nominee Saturday. Susan Davis, NPR News, Washington.
Congressional Democrats are livid. They're declaring their Republican rivals hypocrites for pushing a vote on a nominee less than 2 months before the presidential election after they blocked a hearing for President Obama's nominee on grounds that confirmation should wait until a new president was in office. Your Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
Leader McConnell's actions may now very well destroy the institution of the Senate. If Leader McConnell presses forward, the Republican majority will have stolen two Supreme Court seats 4 years apart using completely contradictory rationales.
Schumer says the next nominee could change the complexion of the Supreme Court for a generation to come. This is NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
An environmental group released secretly recorded video clips today of Pebble Mine executives saying Donlin Gold can't afford to build its gold mine in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. The executives say there might be a way for Donlin to reduce its costs if the companies work together to connect the two Southwest Alaska mining projects by building a road through the tundra. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Christy Schallenberger has a story.
The nonprofit Environmental Investigation Agency released several video clips that show executives from the two companies developing the Pebble Mine in Bristol Bay discussing plans about the mine's development to what they thought were potential investors. But instead, it was people pretending to be interested in investing in the controversial mine. In one video, Tom Collier, CEO of Pebble Limited Partnership, and Ronald Thiessen, CEO of Northern Dynasty Minerals, talked about the future of another big mine in Southwest Alaska, the proposed Donlin Gold Mine. On the recording, Collier says it's too expensive to build, even with the current high gold prices.
The cost of the royalties and the cost of the capital that has to be invested in that project makes it a project that's really difficult for them to go forward with at the current time.
Those royalties Collier is talking about? That's the money Donlin Gold has to pay the two native corporations that own the land and mineral rights. Donlin also needs to build a lot of infrastructure just to operate the mine. An airstrip, a road, a port, a 315-mile gas pipeline, and a power plant. All that could cost Donlin nearly $7 billion. Collier's comments echo a report from a financial research firm that claims the Donlin Gold Mine is overvalued and will never be developed because of its hefty price tag. Collier says one way for Donlin to cut down costs is to build a road from the Donlin mine site to the Pebble mine site that would ship Donlin's ore to a port close to Pebble. He says the state could finance the road and the port. Collier says that's a big win for both companies.
Because if you flip the Pebble switch on, it's likely that you may also be flipping on the Donlin switch.
But on the secret recordings, Northern Dynasty Minerals CEO Ron Thiessen says they haven't formally approached Donlin Gold with the idea.
We've had a couple of conversations, but really we need to get to the point where we have our ROD.
ROD means the final record of decision from the Army Corps of Engineers, which is expected soon. Donlin Gold declined an interview and sent a written statement instead. The statement says, quote, Donlin Gold continues to advance on a standalone basis and is not engaged with any other projects. We remain completely confident in our proposal and its economics, which has advanced through the federal and state permitting process, and are not proposing any modifications at this time, unquote. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Christy Schallenberger.
A public hearing on a November ballot measure could radically change the way Alaskans pick their elected leaders. It was held Monday with only one person calling in. Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports.
If passed, Measure 2's changes would be threefold. First, it would replace separate party primary ballots with one that's open to all candidates. Spokesman for Alaska's Better Elections Initiative, Scott Kendall, says that would end some of the most competitive races being decided by a limited group of partisan voters.
So every candidate gets on the same ballot regardless of party, and every voter receives the same ballot regardless of party. You simply vote for your favorite in every race, and the top four vote-getters, regardless of their party, would advance to the general election.
Then in November, voters would rank their choices in order of preference. And if nobody wins more than 50% of first-choice votes, the candidate with the least number of votes is eliminated. And voters who chose that candidate first have their second choice counted. And that process continues until one candidate receives majority support. Kendall, who served as independent former Governor Bill Walker's chief of staff, says the third part of the initiative would increase disclosure requirements for hard-to-trace dark money supporting political candidates.
That's money that goes into our election system, and because of the way it's transferred through several nonprofit groups, you really, the voting public has no way of knowing where the money actually came from.
The Yes Camp is well-funded, with more than $1 million coming from a centrist political group funded by Catherine Murdoch, a daughter-in-law of media mogul Rupert Murdoch. In Alaska, several prominent politicians have lined up to oppose the measure because they say it would reduce political parties' influence.
Former Governor Sean Parnell and former Senator Mark Begich have called ranked choice voting political trickery.
That's Brett Huber, a former campaign manager for Governor Mike Dunleavy. He's a spokesman for Defend Alaska Elections, which opposes the measure. Its largest donors include state and national Republican Party groups, as well as conservative organizations like the Club for Growth and the Koch brothers-funded group Americans for Prosperity. Huber argues that the current party primary system works, with ranked choice relatively unproven.
The net effect of this system is to take something that's known, understood, transparent, and fair in Alaskans' mind and turn it into an experiment that's failed in other areas and let us deal with the aftermath.
Under the current system, voters registered nonpartisan or undeclared can request any party's ballot. That was an issue raised by cartoonist Pat Race, the only member of the public to testify in the hearing. Race says his House district in Juneau often has competitive Democratic primaries, whereas statewide races for governor or Congress have competitive contests between Republicans. And as a nonpartisan, he can't vote in both primaries at once.
It puts me in the position of having to choose, choose which ballot I want to vote on and which races I want to influence, which is really hard because a lot of these races are decided in the primary elections.
Measure 2 will appear on the November 3rd ballot. That's following an unsuccessful challenge by Alaska's former attorney general that was dismissed by the Alaska Supreme Court. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Researchers from the University of Alaska Fairbanks began looking at big changes to one of the state's biggest glaciers on Monday. As Claire Strempel reports from the Alaska Energy Desk, it's melting so rapidly it could create a new bay north of Yakutat.
What's happening at the Malaspina Glacier may be the largest landscape transformation underway in the United States.
So you're looking at something becoming a big ocean bay, essentially, that's the site of a small state.
Martin Trufer says he doesn't like to pick on Rhode Island, but the Malaspina is bigger. He's a glaciologist with the Geophysical Institute and a physics professor at UAF. He's studied big ice from Greenland to Antarctica.
The Malaspina is kind of a hard glacier not to pay attention to if you're a glaciologist. It's a really big glacier.
Malaspina Glacier sits in Wrangell-St. Elias National Park and flows onto lowland plains on the north side of Yakutat Bay. As it retreats, it's opening up lakes that connect to the ocean. The National Science Foundation recently awarded Trufer's team $1.3 million to study the Malaspina's retreat.
The goal of the project is really to suss out a bit more how likely that is and what rates are we talking about, you know, where are we going to be in 50 years, where are we going to be in 100 years.
His team will measure how fast the glacier moves and how fast it's melting in different places. They'll pay special attention to the front of the glacier, where the ice is turning into those lakes. They plan to find out whether the Malaspina will disappear completely based on different climate models. Trufer says meltwater from this one glacier makes Alaska a big contributor to global sea level rise.
And some of these changes that we're seeing are really actually hard to kind of wrap your head around of what's actually going on. And this is really one of those places.
Trufer says it's too soon to tell what the impacts on Yakutat hunters and fishers may be, but he plans to make community connections and find out. This isn't the first time a big glacier has melted in Alaska. Yakutat Bay used to be full of ice from the Hubbard Glacier about 1,000 years ago. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Claire Strempel.
Water from wells in an area around where firefighting foam residue was dumped this spring south of Fairbanks is safe to drink. 24 wells within a quarter mile of two gravel pits in the Harding Lake and Salcha areas, where 53,000 gallons of water containing firefighting foam residue from Eielson Air Force Base was dumped this spring, were sampled. State Department of Environmental Conservation Prevention Preparedness and Response Program on-the-scene coordinator Sarah Moore says all samples were then tested.
For the chemicals we expected to find based on the firefighting foam residue, as well as for perfluorinated compounds, and we didn't find any exceedances in any of the private wells, which is great news. No safety concerns with the private wells.
A DEC report says some of the private wells contained below federal health level standards of volatile organic compounds or semi-volatile organic compounds, as well as PFAs. She says the presence of PFAs was not anticipated because fluorinated chemicals are not in the firefighting foam. Results from the testing earlier this summer of water from two area public wells also found them to be safe. Moore says testing of soil and groundwater below the actual dump site is planned.
And so that's kind of our next step, is to look at those particular properties where the discharge occurred specifically and see if there's any cleanup required.
The gravel pits where foam residue was dumped and dozens of totes of the liquid are stored belong to local contractor Rolling Stone Incorporated. But Moore says potential responsible parties can also include the Air Force, Army Corps of Engineers, and three base contractors. An investigation of the illegal dumping is ongoing. Despite what it says on the ballots, voters in Juneau's municipal elections do not need a witness signature for their vote to be counted. The Juneau Assembly passed an emergency ordinance on Monday, waiving the requirement for the October 6th by-mail election. On every ballot envelope that arrived in registered voters' mailboxes last week, there is a line for a witness to print and sign their name after witnessing the voter sign their own ballot. The only requirement for witnessing a ballot is being over 18. The Assembly voted 6-3 in favor of removing the requirement. Several Assembly members said they were voting yes in order to remove any possible hurdles that might prevent someone from voting. The emergency ordinance takes effect immediately and applies only to this year's local election. Voters must still sign their ballots in order for them to be counted. Civil rights groups are currently suing the state for requiring witness signatures on absentee ballots in statewide election. The groups claim the requirement places an undue burden on voters, especially since the U.S. Postal Service recently stopped letting workers act as ballot witnesses. Early voting began Monday and runs through October 6th in Juneau.
The local news is supported in part by Ardinger's Fine Furnishings, home of the Tempur-Pedic Ergo Collection and the Tempur-Pedic Breeze, made especially for those who sleep hot. The Breeze cushions and supports you while channeling excess heat away from the mattress. Tempur-Pedic's Ergo Base allows you to move the bed into multiple ergonomic positions for sleeping or relaxing. 486-5554.
And by Arctic Physical Therapy Services, Incorporated. Professional rehabilitation for all your physical therapy needs. We repair the world's most complex machine. 813 Mill Bay Road, 486-4499.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Seafood eating trends tick up due to COVID. More after this.
Fish Radio is brought to you by Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. Online at alaskaboat.com.
Some definite trends favor seafood as a result of the ongoing coronavirus. The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute has been closely tracking the challenges and opportunities and is reacting in real time to people's needs. Pre-COVID, most seafood meals were eaten at restaurants. Since then, a continuing trend is more people are cooking more often at home.
In December of 2019, before COVID, 70% of consumers cooked 3 times a week, and since COVID, 66% now cook more at home. More frequently.
Ariana Elnas is a spokesperson for ASME. At a Comfish forum last week, Elnas said another trend is increased interest in food safety and sales of frozen seafood are on the rise. ASME quickly revamped its Cook It Frozen campaign.
This campaign focused really on filling the pantries and freezers. So this launched in March, right at the onset of COVID, and in May, frozen seafood sales at retail were up 66%.
To tap into people's connections and creativities, ASME and other seafood advocates have partnered with notable chefs and dietitians on social media for seafood Sundays and other specials. ASME's survey of over 13,000 also showed that fishermen and farmers hold the most trust by consumers, right now at nearly 70%. More people want to know where their foods come from, and ASME is urging them to choose Alaska.
And it's meant to promote Alaska seafood all across the board, from Alaskans to the global consumer. And it really pitches seafood as critical to the national and global food supply and lets people know that when they're buying Alaska, they're supporting people's livelihoods.
Direct marketing by more fishermen also is on an upward trajectory. ASME has posted a short survey to identify ways to assist with direct sales. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch. other things besides trash attract bears into town, here are tips to keep them away. Freeze stinky garbage and fish wastes until garbage day. Bring bird feeders inside until winter. Keep your barbecue grills clean and inside if possible, smokers too. Don't leave smelly fish tackle around and bring in uneaten pet food. Bears like dog food better than dogs do. Be bear aware and be a Kodiak trash buster.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 41, date issued September 21st at 10 a.m. There will be a 78-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, September 22nd, to 6 p.m. Friday, September 25th in the following areas. In the Outer Iakulik section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Afognak District, except for the Outer Katoy Bay and Izua Bay sections, remain open until further notice, and the Inner Katoy Bay section remains closed. The Mainland District, the Sheratine Bay, Anton Larsen Bay, Kajuyak Bay, Terror Bay, Inner Uganic Bay, Spiriton Bay, Zacher Bay, and Uyak Bay sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, the Eastside Kodiak District, and the Northeast Kodiak District. As previously announced, the following areas remain open until further notice: the Outer Katoy Bay section and Izuit Bay sections of the Afognak District, the Outer Karluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District, and the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, and the Humpy Dead Man, Cape Alatak, Alatak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alatak District. Until further notice, in that portion of the Northwest and Southwest Kodiak District, south of the latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations. And statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Good afternoon, and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 22nd day of September, the year 2020. The sun rose today at 7:57. It won't set again until 8:07, giving us 12 hours and 11 minutes of glorious rain. That's a loss of 4 minutes and 56 seconds compared to yesterday. Looking at our local district tides, we just had a low tide here on the east side at 11:51. That was a 2-foot tide. Our next high tide will be at 6:10 this evening of 9.4 feet. Then you'll have a low tide after midnight, 12:58 a.m. of minus 0.1 foot, followed by a high tide tomorrow morning at 7:28 on the east side of 6.5 feet. Over on the west side, and these are Uganic Pass tides, you have a low tide coming up at 12:35. That's going to be a 2.26 tide, followed by a high tide at 6:34 this evening of 15.5 feet. Your low tide in the middle of the night will be at 1:20 a.m., a 0.1 foot tide, and your tomorrow morning high tide will be at 7:45 a.m., 12.7 feet on the west side. 52 degrees here in beautiful downtown Kodiak. We're looking for more of these rain and showers for tonight. Showers before 7 p.m., then plain old-fashioned rain, low around 48 tonight. Chance of precipitation tonight, 110%. New precipitation amounts between a half and three-quarters of an inch possible overnight. For tomorrow, more rain. Rain likely, well, let's face it, for the rest of the week. On Saturday, they're talking about just a chance of rain. Looking at our marine weather, mariners be aware. Here's your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. The front along the Gulf Coast will weaken Tuesday night through Wednesday. A complex series of lows will track from the eastern Gulf to the western Gulf Tuesday night through Wednesday night. Your resulting weather, not too good. Small craft advisory through Wednesday at Marmot Island, the Sitkanak, east side offshore. North wind to 20 knots right now, except northeast 30 north of Dangerous Cape. Seas to 12 feet right now. For tomorrow, look for northwest wind to 20 knots, increasing to 30 knots tomorrow afternoon. Seas to 10 feet, will build to 11 feet tomorrow night. Over on the west side, in the Shelikof Strait, you have a gale warning through tonight. North wind to 40 knots right now in the Shelikof and seas to 16 feet. For tomorrow, look for north wind to 25 knots, seas coming down to 8 feet, And for Thursday, northwest 15 seas, 4 feet in the Shelikof. For inside waters, Chiniac and Marmot Bays, Chiniac Bay small craft advisory through tonight. Northeast wind to 30 knots and seas to 11 feet in Chiniac Bay right now. For tomorrow, look for north winds at 20 knots, seas to 5 feet. In Marmot Bay, we have a gale warning today. Northeast 35, seas to 10 feet, will build to 15 feet this afternoon. For tomorrow, look for north winds to 20 knots and seas to 4 feet in Marmot Bay. Kodiak City Council will hold a regular meeting on Thursday. That meeting will begin at 7:30 p.m. in the Borough Assembly Chambers. And it's open to the public, but you will be asked to wear a mask and socially distance. For more information, call the city clerk at 486-8636. The Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having a work session on the same evening, Thursday, September 24th at 6:30 p.m. in the school district conference room. And agenda items include presentation from the Economic Development Corporation founding director Amy Williams, City Kodiak Fire Station, a staff update on the landfill and leachate regulations, and a discussion of ordinance for COVID-19 cost-sharing with the City of Kodiak. For more information, call the borough clerk at 486-9311. Join the public library this fall in reading To the Bright Edge of the World by Ewan Ivey as a community. Beginning September 23rd at 7 p.m., meetings and activities will occur via Zoom every other week through November. To the Bright Edge of the World is an adventure tale, a tale of survival and mysterious forces inspired by the early explorations of Alaska by Lieutenant Henry T. Allen. Stop by the library to pick up your copy and pass it along to a friend or relative. To October 1st at 12 p.m., the Kodiak Public Library is hosting a garden party. Again, that's on October 1st. It was scheduled for the 24th. It's happening at 12 to 3 p.m. Come help dig, weed, and prepare the library garden for winter. Hopefully we'll get better weather on the 1st. September is National Library Card Sign-Up Month. If you need a library card, schedule an appointment to come in and get one. Check out what's new and take advantage of the resources and services available at your public library. Also, every Wednesday at 10:30 a.m., the library offers a virtual children's story time on the library's Facebook page and YouTube channel. The Kodiak Island Ambulatory Care Unit is now offering a 15-minute rapid COVID test. To make an appointment, call them at 486-6181. All testing is performed outside the clinic office in our red top tent or from your vehicle. Again, that number is 486-6188. The Alaska Department of Health and Social Services has notified the Kodiak Emergency Operations Center of a positive test for COVID-19 associated with the Kodiak Island Borough. The new case has been reported for the Kodiak Island Borough. It's a case of a person who traveled to Kodiak Island and began to quarantine upon arrival. This person is in isolation. Staff from the Department of Public Health will remain in contact with the individual to ensure self-isolation and care. This brings the case count associated with the Kodiak Island Borough to 73, with one case currently classified as active locally. The Kodiak Island Borough Solid Waste Advisory Board will meet on Wednesday, that's tomorrow, September 23rd, in the Borough Assembly Chamber at 5:15 p.m. Recycling fishing nets is on the agenda. And I went to the last meeting and they talked about that, and that is an interesting subject. All are welcome. Please wear a mask. And again, that's tomorrow, 5:15 p.m. at the Borough Assembly Chambers. Just a reminder, you could be voting right now. Our local election day is Tuesday, October 6th, but in order to ensure social distancing and reduce crowding at the precincts, the Kodiak Island Borough is making early voting available from now to October 5th. Early voting is similar to voting at your polling precinct on election day. At the time you vote, your eligibility will be verified, and you'll be given a ballot to feed right into the voting machine. Again, that is happening 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. in the Borough Assembly Chambers, and everyone is encouraged to take advantage of the option of voting early. Tonight, the Kodiak City Council will hold a special meeting. The meeting will begin at 7 p.m. at the Kodiak Library Multipurpose Room. It's open to the public, but you will be asked to wear a mask and socially distance. For more information, call the city clerk at 486-8636. Ports and Harbor Advisory Board will hold a meeting tonight, this afternoon. It's going on now. It started at 12 p.m. in Fisherman's Hall. It's open to the public. Run the Rock is a go this year. Things will be a little different, but get a hold of us at the station for more details.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day. Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the Midday Report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.